IVM.
Hi everybody, just wanted to ask everyone for a quick favor. We're running a brand survey right now and would really appreciate it if you could let us know what you think about the advertising on IVM. Go to ivmpodcast.com/survey and do let us know. As part of this, we'll be selecting 10 random participants and sending them some IVM swag, so do fill out those surveys.
Hi, and welcome to Know Your Kano. This is Ampa from Game Mana Ventures, and welcome to another edition of the show. For all our listeners out there, it's been a great journey till now. The show with this season would be coming close to an end, but we'll notify you on that, and as and when we stop on the same. It's been a wonderful journey, and for today's episode, we have someone very interesting. We have someone who's been championing the cause for children, it is Dr. Rakesh Kapoor. I would introduce you, sir. Good afternoon. Welcome to the show. He handles an organization called Bamboo Tree, where he's taking care of families that get affected by the family court justice and the system as it operates. And they've done quite a bit of research on providing all kinds of services and auxiliary help that one can think of to facilitate and make it easier for such affected families and their children. So, sir, thank you so much for being on the show. And over to you. I think the honor would be in yourself introducing yourself on the show for us, because I think we can't justify your laurels, as I would say.
Now, thank you so much, Amber. I wish I had the kind of laurels you have painted out in my case. But I think thank you so much for having me over, Amber, and wonderful for IVM Podcasts to also have me over. And as Amber very rightly mentioned, you know, for the last about 10 years, my organization, that's Bamboo Tree Children's Foundation, has been working with children of separated parents. And as we all understand, that managing children means managing the entire environment around them, the entire society around them. And unfortunately, as I always end up saying, that, you know, you walk in into a room with 100 people and ask them about parenting or what to do with children, you'll have 200 opinions, right? Therefore, what I do is talk less about opinions, but talk a lot more about science and what does science have to say. And as a medical doctor, that's the way my brain has been hardwired. So one of the things that we've been championing for a while now is children of separated parents, what we call in India to be parenting 4.0. Now, what that means is, you know, India, or actually the world over, started with the famous African proverb, which says, you know, it takes an entire village to raise a child, right? However, you know, over the period of time, we broke down into a joint family system, which was parenting 2.0. And then came the parenting 3.0, which is nuclear families. So India is largely into about 78% of the families are nuclear in India. However, urban cities in India, you know, think places like Delhi, Bombay, Bangalore, Calcutta, Chennai, all of these have moved into what we call as parenting 4.0, where there are separated families looking after children, right? So the mother and father have separated. But unfortunately, neither our society, neither our government, and especially our judiciary has, you know, actually be able to accept the fact and actually move into an arena which is parenting 4.0. And this is obvious from two very simple things. The law which still governs these children is the Guardians and Wards Act, which, to your surprise, was made in 1890. And we are still being governed by those laws which are there. Secondly, the organization NCPCR, which was supposed to do this, does not even have accurate statistics around this. Therefore, those are my opening thoughts and comments, and I'll let Amber take over and, you know, grill or ask whatever he feels correct.
Very rightly put by you, sir. You know, when it comes to family law, we are trying to equip ourselves from, I would say, a legal framework into a much more refined body, but that area of law has been left alone, or I would say has been left out, because not many changes or developments have happened. In fact, since you mentioned a couple of acts which are archaic as well, but they are still in operation. But if you look at even the family law for division of property, or you look at inheritance and the Indo Succession Act or the other acts in the family, they have evolved only in limited aspects. But when it comes to the custody and care and child-related services, We are far behind even from the moderately developed side of the world.
Yes.
But coming to you, sir, now since you worked extensively on this, I'm sure you would have drilled these acts by now. Yes. Since you're dealing with both sides of things. It takes a heavy toll when a situation, and I'll start first with the separation side of things, but if something like a separation happens, it takes a very strong toll on the kid, because the system's not equipped to emotionally guide the parents. I would say psychological evaluation, or even for that matter of fact, as a relief from the court, one does not get any of these facilities. So let alone the parents, I believe even the kids suffer to this. What has been your experience with the judicial system when it comes to this?
Yeah, I think that's a very fair question. You know, so before I get into the act, you know, the law which I think the judiciary is not utilizing to its optimal is the Family Courts Act 1984.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
yes,
it's in 35 years so far. You know, the section 10, 12, 14, and 20, these are the four main sections as I look at it from my perspective, right?
Right.
They give all the powers that are possibly needed to the judiciary to frame rules, to hire psychologists, to take up social workers. And by section 20, they said, you know, this has overriding effect, right? Therefore, but unfortunately, none of the, you know, all the high courts have the powers to frame these rules, but none of the high courts have actually gone around and done it in the last 35 years. Therefore, what we did was we conducted a survey of almost more than 500 parents who've been through the family court system, and also 60 legal professionals, that's lawyers and judges. And these were very senior lawyers and judges who've handled more than 1,500 such cases. And the findings were, so to speak, shocking, you know. So the only word that I use for them is parentectomy. You know, as a doctor, you know, when you remove appendix, we call it appendicectomy. You remove a gallbladder, we call it cholecystectomy. So unfortunately, what I've family courts are ending up doing through their orders. And of course, I'm sure that they are doing this not deliberately, but they are removing one parent from a child's life. And, you know, between you and me, Amber, let's discuss this. You know, one of the greatest tragedies that we talk about is loss of a parent for a child, right? Now,
absolutely.
But, you know, what we don't realize is that the loss of a parent, we all understand it can lead to psychological disturbances. But the way we practice medicine has completely changed over the last 20, 25 years by this study, which has been now replicated across countries all across the world, which is known as the ACE study. ACE stands for Adverse Childhood Experiences, right? So what it says is that these children not only suffer from suicidal tendencies, very high level of drug abuse, behavioral problems, teenage pregnancy in girls, but more importantly, I think I'll let that sink in by simply saying their life expectancy is decreased by about 20 years.
Which is quite shocking, but the reality, as you rightly said, because, I mean, I would interject and say that, you know, when something like this happens and you see this in the courtroom going on, the adverse effects of that courtroom drama with ill-equipped amenities and sensitivity, as I would say, and there are a lot of things involved in it. And legally, as you're saying, there are empowering tools, but they're not judicially utilized to expand on providing those services. In fact, in some of my experiences, I can't say all, the panelists who are psychologists, or I would say are the auxiliary service providers to assist in getting to the crux of the case, they are not even technically equipped to counsel such people. Now, sir, let's come to the other interesting aspect. Let's talk about the mental trauma. I will start dissecting it. First of all, I would like to highlight on mental trauma and gender biasness when a proceeding like this begins.
Mm-hmm.
And then not being technically equipped to be able to help that gender in that courtroom when such things are flying. And let it be, it being a girl child, I would say, and I'm not saying that from a feminist perspective, but generally saying that from a male child and a girl child perspective, a child is a child in that age group. What have you seen and how it has been, and what are some of the changes which you plan to bring?
Wonderful. Yeah, that's a great question, Amber. So Let me put it this way. Family courts is one place where we see a significant amount of what we call as reverse gender discrimination, right? So what we are seeing is that the father's role, you know, has been limited to the place of being a provider and a protector, right? Which unfortunately is absolutely untrue. You know, we could do another podcast on what science says about fathers and how extremely important they are and how science has been able to prove that. But, you know, in very short, in about 30 seconds, let me say, and put it across very provocatively. Do you think fathers get pregnant? And we are normal fathers we are talking about.
Oh, absolutely. This is a very intriguing thought test. But yeah, I mean, I would let you only comment on something so deep.
True. So one of the most interesting findings that has come from science is to now say that all the hormonal changes that take place in a mother do take place in the father too. You know, so let me give you an example. You know, so one of the hormones which we talk a lot about is estrogen, which is the one responsible for cultivating the pregnancy, right? The estrogen levels of the father are almost in sync with the mother. They rise and ebb along with the mother. Similarly, one of the hormones which has been called testosterone actually decreases because the testosterone levels are responsible for the aggression in men, right? And they are the ones which produce the provider and the protector effect, so to speak. But as soon as a father sees a child, the father's testosterone levels come down. But more interestingly, now let me ask you this in this sense would be, would you know that the fathers gain as much weight, right, as the weight of the child during the pregnancy, they gain as much weight? Secondly, our Hindi movies has made it very prominent that what is the sign of pregnancy? You see a mother, a vomiting happening in mothers. That's one of the things, signs that we see, right? Do you know 23 to 27% of fathers go through exactly those same episodes? And this is from a distance, right?
And so it is equally...
Yes. So I think that's one area that we do see a lot of reverse gender discrimination coming from actually mindsets, like you rightly used the word, you know, entrenched mindsets which are there, right? Now, the world over, what we are seeing is that shared parenting, that is clearly defined as 35% of the time of the child, right, with either parent, is considered to be shared parenting. That is something which countries across the world, you know, almost about 20 countries I could name, which have now adopted that completely. But unfortunately, what we are seeing in India is what we call as Santa parenting, you know.
Okay.
And what Santa parenting means that, you know, just like Santa Claus comes once in a year, you know, laden with gifts, what we see is one parent, typically a father, comes and visits the child after parental separation, laden with gifts once a month or twice a month. You know, what our survey findings have shown is that the average amount of so-called visitation, the word visitation I obviously hate because the world over they've changed it to parenting time. Visitation is best kept for jailed convicts. You know, that's the way. The typical amount of parenting time given to the non-custodial parent is anywhere between 14 to 18 hours per month. And as lawyers, you would know that is almost the same as the amount of visitation time given to jailed convicts.
Absolutely correct.
Right?
That is totally, absolutely. That's totally correct. Those are the visitation hours, as I would say.
Absolutely. So, you know, what we are doing is by our orders, relegating one parent, typically the father, but it could be the father or the mother, the non-custodial parent, into the role of not just a guest, like a very, very famous lawyer said to me yesterday, that they're making them into ghosts.
Absolutely.
Right.
And that's the true word, I think, whoever that is used, they're actually hinting at turning people into ghosts.
Absolutely.
Yeah, no, and I wanted you to highlight, you know, that this whole procedure, you know, when since we don't have such care of child care services, and by the way, I'm not very pro for child care services, even though from a from like what people would see in the Western countries or in the developed countries that how childcare services are. But from a caring perspective, we do need childcare services. But in the absence of that, the sensitization process, the law does not talk about sensitization and does not talk about expansion of the scope to cover sensitization to that effect. Now, do you see a marginal shift if I pick data up? Let's take a hold of judgments into some discussion. And since, you know, your organization is already highlighting those and bringing it to the forefront, yes. Let's talk about those. You know, where do you feel are those landmark judgments that could have or that can now turn the tables for us?
Wonderful. So there is this wonderful judgment, which is the first one of its kind, right? So which was K.M. Vinaya versus B.R. Srinivas. This was, I think, way back in 2014 by the Karnataka High Court, right? I think that was one of the first landmark judgments which actually recommended and implemented shared parenting, right? So they divided the time into 6 months with the father and the 6 months with the mother, right, of the child, and obviously equal amount of parenting time within weekends during those 6 months which are there. Unfortunately, that judgment got overruled or overturned by the Supreme Court later. But subsequently, I think in the last about 6 to 7 years, so there is this wonderful judgment by Justice Jyoti Singh and Justice G.S. Sistani from the Delhi High Court. And they have given a beautiful judgment where they have actually said, this is a March 2019 judgment, right? Where they actually put in saying that shared parenting should be the norm. And that is exactly what we are saying, that a rebuttable presumption of shared parenting should be a part of the guidelines which are there. Similarly, there is a wonderful new judgment 2020 by the Kerala High Court, where they have again defined shared parenting and used the United Nations Child Rights Convention as a way to actually bring in shared parenting, because it's not just the United Nations Child Rights Convention, it is also the National Charter for Children, which we have created.
And we're signatory to that. Yes,
absolutely. Absolutely. Which talks about common rights and responsibilities, right? For both the parents, whether they are separated, living together, or never married, right? So even, you know, we are now moving into an area where our jurisprudence must work and see where the society is heading, right? And that's what we are trying to communicate, saying shared parenting should be the most common thing. So there are countries all across the world which have done it. India is very slow to pick up. And my fear is that we will end up losing one or two generations which will actually, which will suffer these consequences. And they will suffer these consequences of poor orders which are coming in. But lastly, I just want to mention one more landmark judgment, which is a Supreme Court judgment by Justice Sikri in 2017, where he actually, for the first time, recognized parental alienation. I think, you know, if you could talk a little bit more about that, that would be great if, you know, we get the opportunity.
I mean, in fact, we're going to do another podcast, as I was discussing, where we continue to Know Your Kanun on a different platform, where we talk about, you know, discussing this more. But given today's episode where we stand, I also would like to highlight that parental alienation is another important aspect of any judgment. And, you know, the judiciary and the lower courts is still not so diversified, or I would say slowly coming up the levels to understand this. Let's talk about parental alienation, because that's really an important part. How does parental alienation stand, if I say? Let's talk from a legal perspective also, and a little bit from practically how it operates. You've given us stats on different, you know, of course, you've spoken about how it stands and what effect it has. Let's talk about some parental alienation during the course of a family court. I'll probably create a scenario, you know, for listeners to understand. On most of the topics where I've seen, you know, a dispute being taken place or due to various other reasons that a couple is engaged into a separation and they have a child, the information, the way the proceedings proceed, the way, you know, the counseling is done, it tends to make, as we earlier you know, spoke about, that judicial gender bias is something separate, but it also makes the child not have a sense of understanding whether this particular situation would work in his favor or not. And it might create the parent as I would say, a villain, or would make him feel that they're averse or they're adverse to their needs, or they have been doing the wrong side of things for their, for themselves or for the family. And if I look further into this, there is also ripple effects, I would say, on the child from a psychology perspective, but also from a perspective where the child feels that he does not need to be with such individuals who are creating circumstances which are not conducive for him or her or them to actually stay with them. So your thoughts on this, because I'm so sure this happens all the while. I've seen it happening, so I'm sure you and your organization, while doing the research, would have definitely sounded the alarm on this aspect.
Absolutely. Now, parental alienation is an area of extreme research for us. We are a part of a global consortium of Nobel Prize winners, doctors, professionals, called Parental Alienation Study Group, right? And parental alienation has been, you know, before I get into the statistics, let me just clearly state something. You know, for a normal listener who's not a lawyer or who's not a legal professional or a mental health professional, they believe parental alienation is something like a husband-wife feud or a mother-father feud in which the child becomes a collateral damage, right? However, So, but what is actually the truth is that both the WHO and American Psychiatric Association have called it a severe form of child abuse, right? So if we look at it, parental alienation falls completely within the gambit of Juvenile Justice Act, and Section 75 clearly defines it, right? However, what we are simply saying is, so let me just try and paint a picture by the statement of a child who actually introduced me to parental alienation. And what she said, and this was about an 11-year-old child, a girl. You know, so in that case, we have two parents. We have one parent who's known as the alienating parent, who basically poisons, tutors, brainwashes the other the child to reject the other parent, right? So this child actually told me that for every one day that I spend with my father, I have to undergo 4 days of torture with my mother. 2 days prior to that one day of coaching and telling me what I must do and how I must reject, and 2 days later of intense interrogation of what exactly was that happened during that time and whether I behaved correctly or I did not behave correctly, right? Now, this is, in sense, 4 days of the child in a week. Let's say if the child has weekly visitation with the father, typically goes through. And to give you another example from the same girl, how she started off was, she said that, you know, when I was 3 or 4 years of age, I went in. So these are all words from an interview that we've done with a child who is now about 25. But she told me that when she was 3 years of age, her father had taken her to the zoo. And she was extremely scared. She didn't know what to say, what to do. And in spite of the fact that she loved animals, right? So the father tried everything but didn't work out. So then the father said, okay, maybe the child is not in a good mood. Let me take her out and bring her back maybe on some other day. As soon as the child came out of the zoo, the child was completely happy and good self all over back again. So the father asked the child, what happened, Beta? What did you do? She says, my nanny and my mother had told me that you will take me to the jungle and feed me to the tigers. So for a 3-year-old child, she thought she's going to die that day by being killed by a tiger because her father had come to kill. So
absolutely, absolutely. And this is what parental alienation's definition, as you highlighted, sir, is correct, because it's just not that the parent feels distance. It's just that bashing of one parent by the another in a way where one lets down the other and creates the fear in the mind of the victim is what parental alienation is. I believe it turns into a syndrome as well after a point of time, as you highlighted. And it's very difficult to treat I'm sure patient for this. And in case if one is also looking at, if I even look at a legal remedy for this, if it is not quantifiable because you've lost the years, the formidable years for you to, you know, change back and get the mental support you needed.
I think that's a beautiful point that you raised, Amber, that, I mean, you were so bang on in saying that those years of a child's life, you know, a lot of judges that I've spoken to and lawyers also, they say, "Arey, never mind, the child will come back after 10 years or 15 years when the child is 18, right? But as you wonderfully said, you can never compensate for those 7 to 10 years of the life that the child, and those 7 to 10 years, as I highlighted earlier, are the most important years of a child's life, which have a lifelong impact. You know, you and me today also are psychologists. We will tell you that even today, we are living through our experiences, whether good or trauma, of our childhood. We are all products of our childhood.
No, absolutely, absolutely. Even when I would say, even when there are mercy petitions, or as I would rightly say, whenever the judiciary looks at such situation and tries to solve it, the adverse impact needs to be understood, that, you know, you cannot quantify the loss of years, the pain, the emotional stress, the outcome we're looking at. But my, I think, closing remarks on this, or my point from you on this would be, what are some of the remedies you would suggest? Then how can parental alienation be culminated during such a process being introduced? Now, we've spoken about Juvenile Justice Act, we've highlighted things. I feel from a court procedure or process, or from a legal procedure or process perspective, there are certain things that can be done, right? Proactive involvement of the administration concerned, proactive involvement of local authorities. It could be at, you know, small cells, clinics being set up, technical people being hired like yourself who can look up into these matters, people who can, you know, understand what is being imparted, the child being kept in such a safe environment where he's kept away from all of this. But at home, what do you, how can you solve this problem at home? Because there is no law in the country that can bind or solve this.
Absolutely. No, I think that's wonderful. Let me divide your question into two parts. So one is, of course, the institutional mechanism, and the second is the individuals, that is people at home. So institutionally, there are three ways the worldwide has, people have handled it, right? So the first is countries like Brazil, Mexico, Romania, and Sweden, and there are other such countries who've made parental alienation into a criminal offense with compulsory escalating provisions, you know, starting from fines to revocation of professional licenses, immediate psychiatric consultation and things like that, all the way up to jail and shift of custody. The second way is countries like UK, and, you know, that's the model that I would recommend, is so they have set up a body known as CAFCAS, okay, which is Child and Family Support Services for Children. What they have done is set up an independent body of psychologists, right, who basically help, and that is what I would recommend very seriously for Indian government to look at and Indian judiciary to look at, that they've set up a body, independent body of psychologists who are present within the court premises, right? So in the family courts, they are there, and they perform four different tasks. So the first task is, you know, what I call as primary or preventive. You know, as we all understand, a stitch in time saves nine, right? So what we need to do is first prevent it. So preventing this, these people do a education and awareness workshop for all parents who are walking in into the family court. So your case cannot move to the next step unless both of you have certified, attended a half a day workshop on the child. So that's the first thing that they do. Second thing what they do is they sit with the parents and they make parenting plans. You know, family law is at the cusp of science and law. Right? So it's far superior that the psychologists sit down with the parents because they have the time. You know, our judges are too overburdened and overloaded. They really don't have the time to be able to create individual parenting plans. So they create parenting plans, which will finally see, get the approval from the courts, that the judges. The third thing they do is conduct child interviews, diagnose parental alienation, and one of the things that I would just like to highlight is almost, so the research shows 40% of parents who do parental alienation suffer from personality disorders, typically cluster B personality disorders. So they diagnose that and they help that parent to go through therapy if required and if the parent is willing, right? So that's the second model that a lot of people. And the third is the model that countries like US and certain other countries in Europe pass, which is what they do is, so, you know, one of the judgments which I would really love you and the listeners to go through is a beautiful judgment by Supreme Court of New Hampshire in the US. And it's called James Miller versus Janet Todd, right? It's a recent judgment about 2012 or 13, I think. And they have clearly, beautifully explained what are parental rights and responsibilities and how such cases need to be handled. And they have actually shifted the custody of the child from the parent to the other parent, from the custodial parent to the non-custodial parent, because of simple saying that this is a severe form of child abuse. And if, as you know, as we have in India also, the parents' patria jurisdiction makes it important for the family courts to first protect the child, and then everything else can happen, right? So those are the three institutional mechanisms. I wouldn't go into the details of each one of them. But lastly, just coming to your question about what can people do at home, right? So the first thing that I would request each one of us as listeners to think about is that whenever you hear a child simply come to you, and this could be a child from anywhere between 3 years to all the way 18, right? Or even 30, actually. When they say, I hate my mother or father, right? Don't take the child at face value. Understand the underlying, you know, it's very easy for all of us to believe a four-year-old child saying something like this, right? However, please don't take it at face value, number one. Number two, I think very importantly, the schools and the teachers need to take a very proactive role in not just identifying, but also reporting distress in child, right? Unfortunately, our report cards in schools only talk about the academic marks. We all understand, you know, all of us are adults who understand, let's go back to schools. The people who did, you know, your friends and colleagues who did brilliantly in academics, are they the most successful people in lives right now? We all agree they aren't. It's your mental health which matters the most. Therefore, our school report cards must have teachers reporting about behavioral and social skills of the child. They are, going forward, 10 times more important than our academic or what we call as cognitive skills. The third thing is, I think we must start looking at this as child abuse. If we look at it within our families, all around us, right? I can promise you, you will see enough number of cases. So one of the data points, which I forgot to mention, every year, 1,32,000 children are added to what we call as this alienated pool every year in India alone. Actually, more than 1.5 million children are living after rejecting the other parent or as an alienated parent. Therefore, you will see these cases within your families, all over the place. Please intervene, talk to the child, try and understand from the child what is it, the reasons why he or she hates her father or mother. You know, don't just take the child at the face value, right? And be assured that, you know, you will hear stories which are highly exaggerated, highly twisted. Therefore, use your maturity and to actually sit down with the child. And if possible, lastly, refer the child to a good counselor. We desperately need it. You know, I divide this into my three parts, which I call by the acronym ACT, A-C-T, A for awareness, C for counseling, and T for therapy, right? Now, this is an escalating scale. I'm trying to raise awareness and create as much counseling centers as possible. You know, the therapy is something a large number of psychiatrists will do. You know, lastly, I would just want to request the listeners that, you know, for a greater amount of data on this, which I couldn't share within the podcast, is available on our YouTube channel in the form of a video. It's called Parenting 4.0, and our YouTube channel is called Bamboo Tree Children's Foundation. Please do go through. There are a number of videos with data findings, with interviews with mental and legal health experts, and all the survey findings are also there, right? Therefore, that would be my answer.
Absolutely, sir. No, and also, you know, as you mentioned very rightly here on this, for all those people, my Supreme Court, Dr. Kurmi, the highest court in their jurisdiction in the state, and you guys can look up the judgments. It's fairly easy to locate them online. We'll also maybe share a link on our episode. I'll share it with our team and we'll be able to put it out there for you. But thank you so much, sir, for providing these insights. All in all, I can say is that we need more empathy, more sensitivity, little expansion or interpretation of laws. There are pockets of judgments that are highlighting some of the important aspects here, but not all are able to contribute or look at how we would want this to proceed. The procedures have to be in place. The right checks and balances have to be in place. Local administration has to be well equipped with better clinics and facilities to be able to sensitize. You know, in a country like India, where there is a population divide, there is a paradigm shift suddenly in how people feel, there needs to be such reforms to be able to handle such kind of a sudden explosion in parental alienation and, you know, family law coming into forefront where no one had ever thought that family law would play a major part in the modern lives. And with that, I would like to say thank you so much, sir. It was lovely chatting with you and discussing, I would say, only 30% of the content which you and I have decided to go on forward with. And we would be shortly having you again to talk about the rest of the matters where we can expand on some of these judgments further and talk about remedies in a more practical way rather than in a utopian legal way.
Thank you so much, Amber. I'd just like to end with a beautiful quote by Mr. Nelson Mandela, which says, there is no keener way revelation of the society's soul than the way it treats its children. Therefore, I would humbly request our Supreme Court to actually look and start the judicial reform process from the family law, because that is not just a low-hanging fruit which can be done very easily, but will have the furthest and the most amount of impact on the society. Thank you so much for having me. I would love to be on the podcast again, and wherever, it'll be wonderful. Thank you.
Absolutely, sir. Absolutely. Thank you so much. And these are some great insights on how you know, people just overlook these matters and the judicial system does. But we hope that in future we are able to change the whole procedure. There's advent of new laws or new procedures and methods. And with that, thank you so much, sir. And we'll be shortly be getting you back again to discuss more on this. So thank you, everybody.
Thanks a lot.
Hey, everybody. It's been a great week on the IVM Podcast Network. On Cyrus's, actor and actress Kalki Kekla talk about her amazing new book, Elephant in the Womb. As Cyrus and Kalki go through some funny illustrations in the book, Kalki brings up what people don't talk about when it comes to pregnancy. On The Habit Coach, Ashton explains an interesting perspective on the Teflon mindset. On Smarter with Sid, Siddharth debates whether thrift stores will remain a niche thing or accepted by the Indian masses. On Press Decode with Vagda, Sareen, and Sarah, they discuss how India dropped by 7 spots in the latest Global Hunger Index rankings. On Hanswani, here's this fascinating story. It's titled Helium and it's written by Lalit Karthike and narrated by Casey Shankar. Man, it's such a really, really good thing. Definitely check that out. Do follow us on social media. We're IVM Podcast on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. And remember, if you're enjoying this show or any of other shows for that matter, please do tell a friend. And finally, we'd like to thank our sponsors this week, Cred, Bank of Baroda, Quarter, CoinSwitch, Kuber, Slay Coffee, Intel, Kotak Mahindra Bank, and Oxfam India. Thank you so much for making this possible.
Habits? Routines? How exactly do they help us get better? Well, to simplify it for you, tune in to the Habit Coach podcast. I am Ashton Doctor and I'm going to be here to help you get better daily with some simple, easy to do habits that you can easily adapt to your life. So tune in to the Habit Coach podcast from Monday to Friday, because I believe that awesome lives start with awesome habits.